Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
I'm Tiziana Deering, host of Radio Boston, and we turn back to the city now. Boston Mayor Michelle Wu has a whole plan for the city's trees. And the latest piece of that is a tree alliance that uses private partnerships to help preserve and grow the tree canopy. Roughly 60% of all trees in the city are on private land. Reverend Mariama White Hammond, the city's chief of environment, energy, and open space, stewards the city's tree plan along with protecting residents from predatory energy contracts, addressing heat islands, and so much more. So how does a longtime youth organizer and pastor become the one who speaks for the trees? Well, let's ask her. Reverend Mariama White Hammond, nice to see you again.
It's good to be here.
So how did you come to speak for the trees?
In my time, in my work with young people, I watched climate change going from something that we were anticipating in the future to something that was real and that we were living. I had the opportunity to take young people to New Orleans multiple years to study the history of the civil rights movement and look at the role of arts. And during that time, I built a relationship with that city. So when Hurricane Katrina happened, I had believed in climate change before that, but it became really real to me because I knew those communities. I knew the streets where it was crazy to see the flooding. And that sort of sent me on a path, even through my theological education here at Boston University. I really saw a connection and a true spiritual link between what we're facing in terms of climate change and I think all sorts of justice issues, all sorts of ways that we as a society need to change. So I got a call in 2021 from Chris Cook, who was previously in this role, and he said, you know, just tell me you won't say no. I'm going to tell you about this crazy idea. And he said, I think you should take on this role. And I said, that is an absolutely crazy idea. But it was Holy Week, and I was just about to go into silence and prayer for 3 days. So I said to him, you know what? I won't say no. I'll put it on my prayer list during this Easter weekend, and I'll get back to you. And I said, I think this may be where God is calling me. So here I am, leading a lot of the city's climate work and having a good time doing so.
Do you feel like I am a pastor and I lead the city's climate work? Do you understand that? So it's this and question.
Yeah. So for me, it's deeply connected. I mean, I'm in the AME church, and we have a long tradition of having folks that are bivocational and, who are both political leaders and church leaders. So in my own denomination, it's not quite as odd for me to be doing both. But I do tell people my first job is as a pastor. I love my congregation, and I really couldn't do this without them. But I think for me, what became clear to me in my theological work is that we have to change. Like, I remember going to marches, and we'd say, another world is possible. But it's not just that another world is possible. Another world is absolutely necessary because climate change is not in the future. It's here right now. And so this gives me a real opportunity to work with folks in the city, many people who I worked with before as activists and in multiple campaigns that I've worked on, to ask, how do we build that other world? And I think, as you mentioned, trees are a pretty significant part of that. They're about restoring our planet, but they're also about dealing with some past injustices that are very much alive right now.
There are like five different places I want to go from there. It is interesting to me that in the harshest critiques of those who are passionate about climate change, mm-hmm. Among those harsh critiques is people who believe deeply in and are passionate about climate change treat it like a religion. I have found that to be an interesting critique. Mm-hmm. And yet you explore what your theology teaches you. Mm-hmm. So connect those dots. Theologically, how did you come to connecting your work as a pastor to climate?
Well, so the way I frame what I do, and it's not a rejection of anybody else's term, but I use the term ecological justice. And I love it because ecology is a discipline within the sciences, doesn't try to break things down to like the smallest molecules. What it says is that you can't understand an organism unless you understand its environment. Eco means home. And so ecology really looks at this planet as our home and says, let's like look at what's going on. And I think, you know, we, from what I can see, we just have no home training. And that's a big part of the problem. Hmm. We don't know how to act with each other as siblings. We're fighting all the time. We go into the refrigerator, and even though somebody has clearly labeled something as theirs, we just eat it. And then we didn't even eat the whole thing. We like take a bite out of it, decide we don't like it, and then just, you know, sort of throw it away. I don't even want to talk about what our bathroom looks like. You know, there's a way that we are choosing to be with each other that it's not sustainable, and it's not good for us. I mean, it's not just about saving the planet. Everybody talks about saving the planet, saving the trees. I am all about that work. But really what we're actually fighting to save is ourselves, and to get ourselves right and start to live in a way that's actually viable for the long term. I think young people have been brought so much passion and energy to the conversation around climate. Without them, I do not see we would be where we are today. And a lot of what they're saying is, why won't the adults stand up and be adults and make sure that the planet is livable for them into the future? So I think this is – the climate is a harbinger of the challenges we have that are so much deeper than that, about how we distribute resources, about – the things we choose as important and what we don't. You know, I'm going to meet with some children at the Dudley Street Neighborhood Charter School after this, and they're talking to me about water pollution and lead pipes and things. And what they're raising is so true. We need water to live. So we should be making sure that our water is clean and that the pipes that carry our water allow people to get clean tap water when they, you know, turn on their sink. And sometimes we've said we don't have enough money to handle those situations, but we're able to build gleaming buildings in the seaport. Our values have not always been prioritized correctly. And I think a lot of what's going on with this Tree Alliance is there are parts of our city that are severely under canopy, do not have enough trees. And that is not by accident. Many times it has been because of unjust planning decisions in the past. When you look at where our canopy is robust and where our canopy is lacking, and you take a redlining map from the 70s and put that on top, the correlation is striking. And so now we have got to do the work to remedy what is a historical injustice that continues to be alive in the present.
We're speaking with Reverend Mariama White Hammond, who's the Chief of Environment, Energy, and Open Space for the City of Boston, about the sort of the Reverend piece and the Chief of Environment piece and how they come together. I'm going to play a little sound for you now. Okay, so back in April, we had an entire show dedicated to remembering the legacy of Mel King. Tito Jackson, who actually was just on before you, Kim Janey, former Boston Mayor and President of the City Council, Michael Curry, Massachusetts Legal Community Health Centers, and Reverend Ray Hammond, your father, were part of that conversation. This is Michael, and he's talking about advocacy.
And I used to say, you're advocating for people that don't even know they need advocacy, right? They don't know that a highway is going to destroy their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They don't know that redistricting or the zoning is going to impact their neighborhood. They don't know that they have a health disparity and we can do something about it.
So, of course, the redlining comment from the 1970s, mm-hmm. right, ringing in my ears. The other piece that's interesting about that cut is that came on the heels of a conversation about how deep a family commitment has to be. And he had just referenced Reverend Ray Hammond and you mm-hmm. and the long family commitment in this need generation after generation to do that kind of advocacy and watch the systems in the history and bring them forward.
Yeah.
Right? So you're talking redlining in the 1970s to young people today and bringing climate forward. And, of course, you were a youth organizer, right?
I was.
Yeah. So in this remaining time, let's connect those dots to what you learned in this strong tradition here in this city of activism and organizing.
Well, it's fascinating because I also oversee the Office of Food Justice, and I was honored to be able to do some support and help for the funeral for Mel King, and people don't know how many, so many issues that he worked on and the way he saw connections. And one of the things that he was extremely active in is trying to get more farmers markets into our communities, making sure that people have access to healthy, safe food that's locally grown, which is both a way of uplifting our communities, a way of preserving culture, and an opportunity for us to reduce all of the, you know, pesticides and all of those pieces that go into our food and all of the miles that we spend driving food from here, there, and flying it all over the world. To eat local is a part of creating that new world. And I think what I feel is, and I think Mel was so key about this, is the centrality of love in this work. And climate change, it can be overwhelming. When you look at what we're facing already, when you look at the inequities, when you look at the future, there are times where it just feels heavy. I think one of the reasons we're looking at trees, one of the reasons we're asking these conversations, we're having these conversations about justice, is because, yes, we have to address this daunting, overwhelming crisis, but we need to do so in such a way that brings people in, that creates a world that's better than the one we got now, and that centers love and joy in our work. And I think Mel didn't just say that, he lived it. And that's what we gotta do. And so one of the reasons that trees are really a long-term strategy, let's be clear, they're gonna create shade, but the real benefit of a lot of these trees are gonna be after I'm out of this role, 20 years down the line. But 20 years down the line, it warms my heart to think that children will have so much access to trees, they won't remember the day when we are in the position we are now. Like, I remember when we didn't have grocery stores in this city, when we had to go out to the suburbs to buy food. It warms my heart. Yesterday, the Nubian Square Farmers Market opened. We didn't have that when I was growing up. But it's a fulfillment of Mel's legacy and something that we have to keep building into the future. So it's an honor to be in this role, standing on the shoulders of so many who made it possible for me to be here.
Reverend Mariama White Hammond, Chief of Environment, Energy, and Open Space for the City of Boston and pastor of New Roots AME Church. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's great to be here.